So, you know, having to watch Star Trek is bad enough, but at least on this show, we don't have to watch childish cartoons.
Welcome to Star Trek the Animated Series, where Star Trek gets fucking crazy.
Son of a bitch.
Podcasts, the final frontier. These are the audio logs of the podcast Superhero Time. Their 5-month mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek, alienate even more listeners, and boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
With XV.
I'm the captain. Let's go.
Hey, Mickey.
I might have incorrect facts, but I never have incorrect opinions.
Ken.
Ah!
And Fort Max.
What does God need with a spaceship?
So this week on that one episode of Star Trek, it's, again, those two episodes of Star Trek, the animated series.
They're small.
And I just realized also, like, so far we've only done season one episodes.
We have season two is like 5 episodes long.
I know, but maybe we should just like try to do some season two episodes for next time.
Well,
was there a season spoilers. 2 for animated series?
Yeah, it's literally like 5 episodes long.
Oh, okay.
And what, they I'm run just out picking of episodes off through? A list of like best episodes of the animated series, so you know, I'm kinda cheating here.
Uh-huh. I think we should do it the same way we pick random Toku episodes and just find an episode title that looks funny.
Wait, when you say best, when the website you found that on, was the word best in quotation marks?
Well, it doesn't really matter if it's in quotes or not, because either way, the results have been fantastic.
Yeah, point.
Pretty well. The results have been like 70% fantastic. Because like, every time we get one really amazing episode and one episode that's interesting but ultimately kind of falls short of the other episode.
In fairness, it's hard for anything to follow episode 8 of animated series.
Well, just like it's hard for anything to follow Yesteryear.
Right.
Yesteryear was an amazing episode of Star Trek, like animated or not. It just was an amazing episode of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
The Magics of Megas 2 is, well, let's just say both episodes involve a heavy use of drugs, just from completely different sides.
Ah, the early 70s were a wonderful time.
Okay, so do we want to do the good episode first, or the other episode first?
Well,
we'll
I think
in
we
order.
Do... Yeah, let's do it in order.
All right. So... Megas?
Oh, yes. And when, I say Megas 2, again, it's not Megas the number 2.
No, it's like Como Esta 2.
Yeah, Et Tu
Megas Bute. You. Megas me? Yes.
So, Mickey, you want to lead this? Since you're like actually an entertaining person?
Oh, and, snap.
And probably a little bit drunk?
I am not a little bit drunk.
See, we need...
That's my
Scott,
secret.
We need
I'm
Scott to
drunk.
Not be so removed from us, time zone-wise, so that he can be drunk by the time we get going here, too.
Oh, he's a programmer.
Yeah, in fairness, it's still Monday.
So?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's the perfect day for drinking.
Scott, what do you program?
Computers? What do you think?
I don't know, you can program VCRs.
Yes, that is my career.
Don't be ridiculous. Nobody can do that.
Yeah. No, you have to study under a Kung Fu master for 17 years. No, yeah, I go to everyone's grandma's house and fix their blinking 12 o'clock on their VCRs. That's what I do.
This is Scott, our professional VCR programmer.
Yes. Also, the clocks in your car. I could do that.
Oh, good, because when it's daylight savings, mine's always an hour out of sync.
Yeah, so about half the year yours is right. You know what they say, a digital clock is right at least 6 months out of the year. Something like that.
All right, now, The Magics of Megas 2.
Hails to the yes, oh.
All right, so the episode opens up with Kirk pontificating about how all the great scientists think the center of the galaxy is still producing new matter. Sure.
So should I jump in with, like, astrophysics at this point or what?
Well, are you smarter than William Shatner?
Yes, I am smarter than William Shatner, but I am not smarter than Kirk. So you can take that as you will.
Meanwhile,
what I understand, see, we knew in 73 that there were more than one galaxy. We knew that since, like, the 30s, that, like, there was more than one galaxy in the universe, and it wasn't the center of everything.
But in the future, Starfleet has determined that that is actually not true.
Yes, we were wrong. There's only one galaxy.
What we saw
the facts
in the
were
distance,
confusing.
What we saw in the distance and thought were other galaxies were actually just like these little clouds at the edge of the galaxy. A couple of them were smudges on the lens.
Pigeon droppings. Yeah, pigeon droppings. Russians, I think, were probably to blame for a lot of this too.
They were reflection caused by the crystal shell.
The Russians sent up a satellite and actually just like hung these clear plastic sheets in orbit.
So basically, the cell animations we're seeing now, that you can see the dust move when something moves on screen.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So they used the same technology that was made to create this episode.
Exactly. Filmation actually created Andromeda.
Wait, the one with Kevin Sorbo?
I was going to say that
definitely has too much motion for filmation.
that was all his hair, though. It was just flowing all the time.
Disappointed.
What the hell is Kirk saying?
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, I watched the first two or three minutes of this, and I'm like, oh, this is where Shatner stole the idea for Star Trek V from.
Oh, yeah. Let it out.
Well, actually, you know, reading behind the scenes about this episode,
it does have the frisky cat alien, so...
Oh, it totally does.
Originally written, it was about finding God at the center of the galaxy.
Oh.
And CBS did not want that in their children's cartoon, so that got kind of reworked into what we got.
So instead it became finding the devil in the center of the galaxy.
And that was a little bit too much, so they're going to just kind of lampshade it a little bit, saying it's magic.
Yeah, they didn't lampshade crap. They called the dude Lucifer.
They did it just enough to get past BSAP.
Well, no, what they
said
is...
He's got horns... A goatee and a goat body. He ain't. He's not.
And his name is Lucifer.
Yeah.
But they didn't use the S word.
Besides, they just said, "What if I told you he was Lucifer? What if that was the case?
What if he's not? Yeah. What if I told you his name was Lucy?"
So that's where Lucille Ball went.
I think she was still alive.
Star Trek, the original series was filmed at her studios.
Uh huh.
Yeah, Dizzy Lou, that's true. It's all coming together.
It's all like coming back to me now.
Yes. So, yeah, they're in the Phlogiston.
Wasn't that the tagline for Boomerang? It's all coming back to you now?
No, I was just thinking that that's a... Is that Meatloaf or is that Celine Dion? I always get their songs confused.
They are pretty much the same person.
Well, they have the same writer, actually, so...
Gino.
Anyway, okay, Star Trek, yes. So the Enterprise is cruising along through the 4th of July fireworks display at the center of the galaxy.
It is, and that is a really pretty background painting that they have there.
Mm-hmm. It'd be a shame if something happened to it.
It also wouldn't be out of place in a Maku space sequence at all.
No, it really wouldn't. It really wouldn't.
All right, so there's a matter energy whirlwind in space, and it's drawing them all the way up to warp 10 towards the center of the galaxy.
Oh, see, the way I was taking it is that was the power they were trying to use to break away from it.
Yeah, but that's a measure of speed, though. That's the thing I don't get. It's like, we're already there, so we're going to accelerate to it at trillions of times the speed of light. You would have gone past it.
Well, no, it's the center
of the galaxy. This is old warp scale, too, remember, though.
It's the center of the galaxy.
10 is probably like warp 4 of next generation scale.
Besides, it's the center of the galaxy, so even if you're just, like, racing forward, you're just going around in a big circle anyway.
That's true. Plus, as Hey Mickey pointed out, this is the old warp scale, so, like, warp 10 is, like, 200 miles an hour. So it doesn't really matter.
Well, Kirk has the brilliant idea, well, this must just be, like, a real storm, so let's drive into the center of it where it's calm.
Thank God it wasn't a black hole. It would have been boned.
Well, thank God Kirk thought of it because it's right.
That's true, because his science officer was not smart enough to figure that out. Okay, looks over at Sulu, who's unconscious on the ground after being shaken up. He's like, we need to get there! And he looks over at the con officer, who's just taking a nap.
Well, he also lost his head again, so... Or, I guess, lost his body.
Oh, it's even better. I love how the animation sells in this, because the characters look very good. I mean, they almost look like they traced over the actors. They showed them. But when they move in particular ways, they look ripped as hell.
Probably because they traced them from some other thing.
Yeah, not actual Shatner, I can tell you that.
Filmation traced a lot of their drawings from previous stuff.
Well, and if you look at, like, there's one shot of the Enterprise moving in this, which is basically a frame-for-frame lift from the TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Which they probably rotoscoped over that, too.
Which, you know, it's understandable. They wanted to keep the same exact look. I don't fault them for that. Mm. But the strangely per-frame super muscular badassness, that's a little weird. It's like those shirts get tighter and looser depending on what the scene is.
Well, in that respect, they're actually accurate to the TV show, because the actual uniforms did that too, because the first time they dry cleaned them, they shrank in odd ways and they couldn't pay to make more.
I did not know this.
I did not know that.
So yes, right here on this show, you can hear about the dry cleaning perils of Star Trek, the original series.
Now, was that the regular uniforms or the dress uniforms that did that?
I remember
were they in the basement or in the Tricker Magnum?
I remember when Sci-Fi Channel started airing the original series, and like they were doing it in the 90-minute time slots, so they didn't have to like make edits for commercials. They were also adding to the time with little snippets from like crew members and some of the actors that would work for the little bit of money Sci-Fi was offering, and that was one of the things that was talked about. How when the uniforms got clean, they started shrinking, and that's why they look so weird in a lot of the shots. Just stuck with me, because it's like, wouldn't the wardrobe department know how to avoid having that happen?
And they still had to keep doing it. they had to keep cleaning them.
Uh-huh.
Everyone was very sweaty in the 60s. It was just a very hot, oily time to be alive.
You know, I mean, look at the close-ups of some of the people in the show. I mean, they're, you know, dripping with sweat half the time, even when they're not doing anything.
They've got a thousand suns aimed at them to film. That's why.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, you know, stuff in the last 30 years, you don't really get that the same way.
No, because anytime they want to show anybody in distress, they are covered in a sheen of dripping sweat. I mean, remember Larry from the last episode? Dude looked like he dunked into the pool. It was like he had fallen into the vetch oil vat they keep on board.
It's like me on the elliptical after 20 minutes.
Buzz, buzz.
So the Enterprise is falling into the center of the galaxy? Question mark?
All right, so... Star Trek, yes. So the Enterprise is cruising through the storm, heading down their Willy Wonka Tunnel of Love.
With hamburger patties, buns, rather.
Yeah, because if you're going to go full-on drug ordeal, you might as well have some food to munch on. So they arrive at Planet Red Watermelon.
Yeah.
And
it looks delicious, by the way. That planet looks delicious.
I had a cake that looked like that once.
Once.
Well, so then they ate it and I didn't have it anymore.
And life support immediately goes out, and they all immediately run out of air.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, because...
So I guess that they got just enough oxygen to breathe for the next 5 seconds at any given time.
Well, see, they have too many people on the ship. That's the problem. Like, the size of the ship is made for about 150 people, but they got 400 on there.
That's why it's so hot and humid, too, because all the body heat and the... Ugh.
They're basically running the life support system at the most it can handle. So anytime anything goes wrong, everybody just dies.
Ooh, it's the precursors. So all that time, Scotty was talking about the life support systems.
It's the precursor to the consoles that explode when the ship, you know, has some turbulence or whatever. Somebody sneezes a couple decks down, the ops console explodes in someone's face.
Yeah, it was a bad move going from Duotronic computers to, you know, EPS systems.
So exploding the exploding panel system.
As the crew clutches their throats and falls to the ground dying, through the view screen suddenly, Satan!
No, not Satan. Clearly not Satan. How dare you, sir?
You're right. Clearly this is Puck.
Yes.
And the first thing Kirk does when he sees him is like, help! Because that's always a good way to start when you meet the devil.
Well, when the dude is ripped all to hell and he can make his hand grow to the size of the rest of his body.
And, well, again, this is Kirk.
Kirk pleads for help and Satan responds by shouting out, fabulous! And brings everyone back to life.
So, we know where Kirk's going when he dies.
Well, Kirk could probably take the devil in a fight.
But this is the gay devil.
Does that make a difference?
I don't know. It might. Anyway, now the Enterprise is pumped full of Satan's air. He introduced himself. His name was Lucien.
Yeah. And apparently he waxes everywhere above the waist. Those are some shorn armpits. Look at them. They're just smooth as glass. And no nipples.
Well, I mean, he waxed a little too hard one day.
Oh, God.
Jeez. Bop! Oh, God.
And he has got one move where he raises his hands over his head. It's like, hey!
That's his fabulous move.
Oh, it is. So the alien, because we're in the animated series, we can actually have non-human crew members, which is awesome, which is very Star Trek. And I'm glad they finally did it. So Eric's is... mentally deficient? Is he on there like some sort of like joke from his species or what? Because he's always like, I don't know what's going on. He's always like, I like cats.
He's just, not terribly helpful.
No, he's not helpful at all. What is his job there? Because Sulu's pilot. So what does he do?
Well, apparently he's just as competent as Chekhov is because he's doing Chekhov's job.
But he has a third arm, so he can actually do more than Chekhov.
Yeah, no, he can do stupid things three times as fast.
Well, his job is to do the Chekhov job, which is to be, you know, the hot young thing to attract girls to the program. Wait.
It's working. It is working.
So expect to see him on the cover of Tiger Beat any minute.
Why wasn't he wearing a monkey's wig then?
Monkeys wear wigs?
That's monkeys with an E.
Yeah, they had fake hair, but they did play all their instruments.
That'd be minkies. So they teleport down to the planet.
Yeah, so Lucien teleports them straight into an acid storm.
No.
Not
by
the
acid, process,
no, acid trip.
Yeah, you mean LSD, right?
Yes.
Where it rains LSD.
And
I love the shot of McCoy playing peekaboo, too.
If I keep my face covered, this isn't happening.
Right. And then his arms just kind of slide and rotate out of the way.
This scene is horrifying.
Yeah, there's Kirk all wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
And Lucien's like, oh yeah, I forgot how much you enjoy having solid forms. What the hell, dude?
Yeah, what do you say, like, you know, you got to think about bodily integrity or something?
Right. Which all
this
I could think
upsetting.
Yeah, which all I could think of is that sounds like something that like a frat boy would say to a girl.
This is some Cronenberg shit.
Oh yeah, this is body horror 101. And there's a shot of McCoy looking young. He's like 20 years old in this one shot. He has no lines in his face.
Well, there's also a shot of Lucien looking like he's young as well, standing next to a golden diamond that's never explained.
Right.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there he is as a little,
little baby Satan.
Satanette.
A little kid.
Oh.
So it's like, all right, fine. I'll interpret this world into something your puny little stupid head's gonna understand. Here's an alien landscape, like in any other episode you've ever been to.
Oh, that's lovely.
So how am I doing all this shit, you might ask? Magic. Have an apple from Satan.
That always works out well.
Well, it's okay. Only McCoy ate it.
And no one told him not to, so...
And that's why McCoy is alive 80 years later, with no sign of dying yet.
You're in perfect health. What happened? Satan apple, you know.
No, he's just going to live forever, but continue aging.
Oh, God.
You remember how he looked in that episode, Next Generation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he looked like Pulaski in the second.
You know, I had the action figure of that McCoy from Encounter at Farpoint.
Now, when you say action, do you mean exactly?
Make the jokes you want, but the Playmate Star Trek figures actually were pretty well articulated for when they were made.
Oh, dude, I got a closet full of them, I know.
Yeah.
But do you have that one episode of Voyager, the action figure?
No, but Mickey does.
I certainly do.
No, I was asking Scott.
Oh.
Oh, no, no. No, I've only got one special action figure, and that was made by Hey Mickey. It's from a D&D campaign. Don't worry about it. It's a
D&D
character.
Make me sound nerdy.
Heaven forbid.
We'll make you the person who made a D&D character based on Deneb sound nerdy.
Yes, but Scott makes it sound nerdy. I make it sound cool.
Yes, that's what everyone tells me.
Okay, so Lucien, he's talking about how hot all their dames are on this planet because they can use magic to look as sexy as they want.
And one of them is She-Ra.
Completely, yeah. She-Ra. Oh my Holy God, they stole this design for use in the 80s.
Yeah, but again, this apparently Star Trek is still sexist as hell. This was made in the early 70s, but still it's like, oh, any woman here can be as young and beautiful as she wants to get a man. That's literally what Lucien says. That's literally what he says.
Although, you know, it's also kind of implied that men could be as buff and sexy and goat-legged as they want to be.
Right, I mean, because clearly he picked the most sensual of forms.
Or, you know, they could... Or they can be as short and fat and Victorian-looking as they want to, too. I mean, it just depends.
Or you can be a wizard dressed head-to-toe in yellow robes and a pointy dunce hat to make a glass jungle gym? I don't know.
Yeah, because
I just
like,
too, that they specifically describe that as a magical contractor.
Yeah.
Yeah, which at
this
point, I'm
there with Ninja Consultant.
Except this isn't the product of bad translating.
Yeah, I'm okay with this, though, because they would take the, you know, magical world into, like, its literal conclusion, which is, yeah, you just hire wizards to do shit for you, you know.
Now, okay, Spock chimes in here, and I kind of love how just completely at ease all the shit Spock is.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
It's like, okay, well, we've always kind of thought that, you know, be another dimension involved with the universe creation, and I guess this is it, and I guess magic is different from logic, so this is all logical in its own way. That's cool, I guess.
Yeah, he's totally chill. He is so full of chill about this.
Well, think about it from Spock's perspective. I mean, he's discovered a new form of logic nobody's ever considered before.
Fascinating.
He will be the hit of all the Vulcans now.
So Lucian's still going, yeah, it's magic, blah, 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 blah.
It's magilogic.
Yeah.
So Kurt chimes in with, so, Lucian, you keep saying that we're your friends. Do you know us? And Lucian's like, oh, ha, ha, you're pretending you don't know me. Ha, 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 ha. I've always been with you ever since the garden.
Ha, ha, ha. Now here's a bunch of KKK members who hate Smurfs.
Yeah, so he wiggles his fingers in the pond and covers up. I don't know. It's like, they look like villains from the Pole Position cartoon or something.
they look like Moltar's sad brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just hate Smurfs. What can I say?
So he starts giving a little history lesson of like, okay, yeah, our magic people and shit. We went to Earth to be advisors for mankind throughout history.
Oh, the scene where they're like flying from Magus 2 to Earth, that looks straight out of a Scientology video of how things get to where they're going. I mean, look at that. That is like straight out of the propaganda from L. Ron Hubbard. Sorry for alienating all your Scientology listeners.
We'll get every denomination week by week until they're all gone.
Yeah, thank you for sending me the checklist, by the way. I'm working on it.
Up next, we're going to alienate atheists. So as Lucian is reminiscing about, oh, how great it was to use magic on your puny people. And Kirk's like, well, if you loved us so much, why'd you leave us? To which he just laughs menacingly. Ha 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 ha.
Right.
And doesn't really answer the question.
Yeah, because at this point, you're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know something seriously shady is going on. You just don't know what yet.
Goats don't wear shoes, do they?
No, but he's carrying a
shoe. Yeah, I mean, horses wear shoes, so, you know.
Their feet are kind of bigger, though.
Before Kirk can call him out on dodging the question, he's like, oh, time for you guys to go. Bye. Snaps fingers are gone. And suddenly they're back on the Enterprise, and the planet
is
covered by...
with a cryptic message of, don't get noticed.
Yeah. Be very quiet. Don't make any noises or any sudden movements.
Right. So it turns into, like, Hunt for Red October. Only with slightly less Sean Connery. So they don't know how the ship is running. They just have no answers.
So here's where Spock has a great idea. I'm going to look up on the Wikipedia how to magic. And he grabs a crayon and starts drawing a pentagram on the floor of the bridge.
Well, that's logical. I still think that a lot of Spock's logic was basically the fact that he was twice as strong as anybody, and if anyone ever questioned him, he just kind of raised his fist at them.
Oh, also, Lucian...
He gave the Vulcan symbol for bitch, please.
At some point in the episode, Lucian calls Spock my elfin friend.
Yes.
So
Spock chants out the magic words of Om Nam Javai, Om Nam Javai.
But
he grips
this...
up McCoy's heart and then floats a chess piece.
Yeah, now wouldn't this have been awesome if they had actually made this and this aired in the 80s? People would have lost their shit because there was all the big D&D scare of Satanism and all this stuff. Man, people would have flipped. They would have flipped.
And then Star Trek was never heard from again.
Right. I can't believe that this
episode.
I don't
know. The first episode of the first season of Next Generation didn't manage to kill it somehow, so.
It's a resilient beast, that's for sure.
So, meanwhile on the bridge, Sulu is practicing magic too to summon the most beautiful creature he can think of. A man in
his
drag.
His sister. I was going to say it was his sister. Oh, that's also, no man in also, drag. Like, look at that body.
Also, nobody on the bridge seems very alarmed that Sulu's just, you know, summoning a girl for himself in front of everybody.
He's summoning up bridge sluts, and everyone's like, oh, that's cool.
Well, they're used to it because of Kirk. I mean, that's standard day for them. They fly over, like, poor planets and then beam up the hottest girls from the, you know, slums.
It's like a precursor to Geordi's holographic girlfriends.
Oh, yeah.
I like this part. What happened to Geordi was that he was blind.
I like this part, too, because of this, you know, he summons the his girlfriend. It turns out to be Lucy. And then there's this crazy shit flowing through the air. And
yeah,
it's just...
so apparently doing all this magic has alerted the planet to their presence. And they're unhappy, and they're sending up a Black Sabbath video to torment them.
A Black Sabbath video that is voiced over by George Takei himself.
Yeah.
They couldn't get another voice actor to do this. Not even James Doolin would do it. He's like, ah, I don't even want to do it. Make Takei do it.
They had the scariest sounding voice they had on cast.
Well, which is true. Oh, my.
So as the aliens are pissed, they make the Enterprise glow yellow, split it in half down the middle like a slice of bread, and it blows up.
Yeah.
Oh.
The end. And it, no, wait!
And at this point is where I turned off the video and went and did something else. So I don't, I figured that was the end. Apparently I was wrong.
Nope. Let's go back in time to Salem, Massachusetts, with the entire crew of the Enterprise in stocks, including a specialized stock for our three-armed companion, which is kind of awesome.
Well, that one was... Never mind, I don't know how blue I can work here. I can imagine other uses for that third hole.
That's what stocks are generally used for, from my understanding, anyway.
So, other things this is reminding me of now is Encounter at Farpoint.
Yes, let's put humanity on trial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't believe this ripped off Next Generation so badly. Very disappointing.
If I wasn't so lazy, I'd lean forward and slap you.
No, I just wonder how much of future Star Trek this one episode actually did inform, because, like, the people of Megas 2 basically are the Q continuum.
Yep.
The initial part of the plot is Star Trek 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what else is here that we're not quite putting together yet?
Oh, well, let's see. The front elevator on the bridge...
Yes, that's very important to mention.
And I do like the fact they have Spanish conquistadors hanging out with the pilgrims.
No, those are knights. Because they had all kinds of knights in Salem in the late 1600s.
Yeah, yeah, because their armor making and knights of chivalry were just all over North America at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I do like, also, too, they go on this big deal about, we came to Earth and you guys were dicks. And, and at no point, again, no point does Eric's go, three arms, hello, why did you even bring me here?
All Earth people look the same as, I'm not from Earth.
Yeah, I don't even know these motherfuckers.
No, but as we've established, Eric's isn't that smart.
No, he's just like, duh.
Maybe I am from Earth.
I'm the ugliest human.
He was never an alien at all.
The worst body dysmorphia ever.
I should have hair.
Yeah, so they're giving their sob story of, you know, so... Everyone hated us because we wouldn't do magic for them. They called us devils. So we all went to Salem to hide.
Oh, the main guy's name.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and the main dude's name?
Where you did it.
Asmodeus. How cool is that?
Wasn't that a model car by Pontiac in the late 70s? The Pontiac Asmodeus?
If it were, I'd have one. That would be awesome. Remember how bitching that would be? Fire coming out of it everywhere. Oh. Six souls to the gallon. Oh, that'd be great. Which is better because, like, electric cars now only, you know, one soul, and that's the person who bought it.
Look, give me one of those like semi-hybrid cars that has a diesel generator to power its electric motors.
Yeah.
I would totally go for that, except without the diesel part because I don't have a garage to keep it warm in the winter. Fucking diesel.
Yeah. Can't handle when it's cold.
Fucking gasoline jello garbage.
So they're on trial, and Spot gets to do the Riker part. Again, total ripoff of Next Generation. And so he's got to be the
yeah, because Spock's the one who's like, you know, I'm not from Earth.
Yeah, because he's smart. Even Spock in the animated series is smart.
Right, and they listen to the one that looks the most like a human when he says he's not from Earth.
Yeah, I'm totally not from Earth. Look at these ears.
Right.
No human would have ears like this.
Yeah. Poor Eric's is just like, I'm the ugliest human. I'm sorry for whatever I did.
Well, you know, what if Eric's was born on Earth? Then he would be from Earth.
Well, not if Trump has his way.
Space Trump. You know,
birthright won't have... never mind.
Earthright?
Yeah, Earthright. All these aliens bringing their anchor larva. So at this point, they're like, oh, well, you know what? If you don't believe us, check our ship's computers. You know, just look, we have all this history and all this data. Just check it for yourselves. So they
and
do.
Then they throw a bunch of tapes. Yeah, they throw reel-to-reels over their heads.
And punch cards. Punch cards. The Enterprise runs on punch cards, y'all.
Ah, well, see, it's a very stable system. There's no, like, magnets or anything to get messed up by the rigors of space travel.
Yeah, except for moisture or, you know, fire.
No, there's no moisture in space.
Oh, you know, it's also the Enterprise gets thrown to left and right.
I mean, plastic punch
right.
cards are a thing.
You'd think that someone carrying a stack of punch cards would spill them.
Yes.
They're numbered.
Well, yes, that'll solve everything.
That's why I have Eric. He's got three arms and he's got no other skills. Let him put them together. Okay, I'll pick them up. All right, so they put Lucian in a gumball?
Or something like that. But I've lost track of what's going on. But the point we're at right now is where Captain Kirk is fighting the aliens to create the universe using magic. He's got a rainbow shield and lightning bolts flying out of fingertips and shit, and it's fucking awesome.
This is so freaking cool. At this point in the episode, I was like, I can't believe this is happening. This is so awesome.
Like,
Captain Kirk
I
is
know,
fighting to save Satan using magic at the center of the universe.
Like, I know the writing credit for the episode is to someone else, but sure. I can't ever believe that Shatner didn't write this part himself.
Oh, he was drinking. He bought this guy like a very expensive bottle of cognac or something, I'm sure. Oh, this is so cool. This was awesome. It's like once he figured out this, oh, I can just believe it. Oh, well, who's got more self-confidence than me? I believe he believes in the depth of his core of his humanity that he's the most awesome person in the world. So, of course, he kicks like Asmodeus's ass in magic.
You can't fight a planet. I'm going to try.
Because I'm freaking Kirk.
But, so he kicks Asmodeus's ass, then like a Klingon bird of prey appears behind me, whips around, right, zaps at it, and explodes.
Yeah, this is what Shatner wanted and the Star Trek V to be.
Pretty much. Well, at this point, I'm surprised Kirk didn't say...
This is what all those cut special effects would have been.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I'm surprised at this point Kirk didn't just decide, you know what, guys, you can leave the Enterprise. I'm going to stay here and rule this entire plane of existence with my willpower. But at the end, it was all a trick.
Or was it? Lucian really was the demon called Lucifer?
Well, he was, but the whole thing about him being put on trial was a trick to see if humans had compassion or not. And that's the thing about a lot of these
morality
tests. And apparently
they proved they had compassion by Kirk kicking everybody's ass.
Right. All these morality tests.
That was the moral thing to do.
Yeah. Like in the episode of Enterprise we watched a couple weeks ago, you know, these two aliens are wandering around watching what humans do. It's like, all humans have to do are not be just suicidal or psychopathic maniacs. oh, I guess they're more moral and evolved than we thought. It's like, yeah, they just didn't let their people to die. I mean, that's like anybody would do that. What species would just like let their people die without even trying?
Oh, you mean the Enterprise episodes with the Organians?
Yeah, if that's what they were.
I think they actually said that at some point in the episode.
No, really?
If we're thinking of the same episode, yeah.
Oh, the Jem'Hadar. They totally would.
Yeah, but they're a manufactured race anyway. They don't care.
That's a little specious.
Well, you know, look at Eryx.
I bet you someone probably left him to die.
Yeah, his own people left him to die on Earth.
Asteroid by himself.
Well, yeah, you didn't see him in the bridge crew in these final scenes, so yeah. He's still in the stocks. Okay, I guess this is my life now. That episode was friggin' awesome.
And on paper, it sounds so awful.
Uh-huh. No, but then you get Kirk, you know, holding up rainbows as a shield and being surrounded by flames just to call water from the sky and not get wet.
Kirk makes a badass wizard. Let's just put that out there. I mean, he can beat Satan at magic and Asmodeus the demon in the center of the galaxy. He's just that awesome.
I think my favorite scene in the episode, though, is Spock getting a crayon and drawing a pentagram on the floor of the Enterprise.
I mean, that's the point where you just look at the episode and go, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and everyone's just not impressed by it either. Like I said, especially Spock. He is cool as a cucumber the entire time. Although I would point out that his little pentagram he drew it didn't have the circle or anything. So it's just a geometric shape.
Circles are illogical.
They're harder to draw at an angle on a, you know, animation cell.
Well, they're impossible to draw by freehand, so.
Well, says you.
Well, for well.
Oh, yeah, Mickey can only draw penises freehand.
With both hands.
Yeah, it takes both hands for him.
That's why I drive a Scion.
That's why the steering wheel is pushed totally forward.
Mickey goes, like, engage manual steering column, and then unzip.
I detach the wheel from one call and place it on another.
Oh, God. Like a steering wheel on your crotch. It's driving me nuts.
Arr.
So that episode was well worth the time. Mm-hmm. I can't believe they actually animated that and drew it. And someone approved it. They read the lines.
I wouldn't say they animated it.
They slid around some animation cells.
Uh-huh.
So now that that's over with, let's get on to more uncomfortable misogyny.
Ah, yes.
Well, it is Star Trek.
It's awesome to think that this was progressive at the time. To me, that is the most pleasurable thing about this. At the time, this was like, oh, this is so progressive. Look, there's a woman who's allowed to speak, you know. Way to go, Mary Tyler Moore.
I think what we're going to end up taking away from this whole podcast thing in general is just that Star Trek's kind of shitty. Like, in its expression of social views, it's kind of shitty.
Well, in 2015 it is.
Now it is. Yeah. You don't think of it as, like, look how far we've come.
I mean, there's other things that it talks about which are very relevant today and express the right ideas.
Right.
Then there's this.
Yeah, but in this episode does kind of double back on itself, though, and kind of make up for it. Because at a certain point, I was thinking, oh, well, that's just terribly sexist, and I can't believe they're doing this. But later, it kind of redeemed itself. I'll point it out when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, Bud's passion, or space roofies.
It's on a third grader's painting of a sun.
Everyone's favorite Ferengi, Harry Mudd, is selling snake oil to the locals. The locals.
It's really
part local, part native.
It's really too bad Roger Kermel died before Next Generation started, because if anybody should have met the Ferengi.
Yeah, why wasn't there
a with his mustache?
Yeah, why wasn't there a Harry Mudd in Next Generation? He would have been such a great character to show up.
He died.
Well, no, like a relative or something. That kind of character.
We got Vash.
Yeah.
Different kind of character.
Did not even do any stampeding at all. It was horseshit.
No, the stampeding was added later.
Yeah. And the name sounds completely like Gash and Badge at the same time. It's very distracting.
It's from a portmanteau of the two.
Exactly. So I like the monkey baboon people on this planet, too.
Yes, they were actually in the Mos Eisley Cantina, and his toy was called Snaggletooth.
Great, now we're going to get sued.
The shitting.
Sorry.
All right, so as Harry Mudd is trying to sell love potion number 9 to the yokels, he calls out his beautiful
Actually, I think
young...
that's I think that's love potion D20.
Ah. He calls out his beautiful blonde assistant who comes out and says, "Oh, Harry, I love you so much."
In the completely uninterested voice of Majel Barrett.
Yeah.
Make a note of that.
Oh, yeah. I like the miners' voices. They're like this. It's like, I'm a miner. Oh God, my throat. Why?
I'm a miner. I have coal lung.
Yeah, those are the most dour looking baboon aliens. So they just look so sad to be there. And then Spock straight up murders the bitch.
Yes. Kirk's like, "We're here to arrest you." He's like, "You can't do that. I'm not in your jurisdiction." Spock's like, "Yo, I'll kill your wife." Zap. Now she's a wizard. What?
What? And then this little purple wiggly thing runs off, but you still know Mudd had sex with it. You know he's still tagging that.
No. The only thing Mudd loves is money. So unless his wife was made of money...
Well, it is a woman. You can't buy and sell them in this universe, so...
Oh.
They are a form of currency.
Also, I'm going to call into dispute the whole jurisdiction thing, because, like, once they find out where he is, all they need to do is call up to the ship and have him beamed up, and it's like, "Hey, you're in our jurisdiction now."
Right. Oh, I like the trick Spock does, or somebody does with their phaser, and blows that huge canyon right there in the middle of their work camp. Holy crap.
Set phaser to devastate.
Yeah, I said I'm like level 16 or something. Holy shit.
The unfortunate part is Spock was aiming for the miners.
There must be no witnesses.
It's only logical.
We can't have anyone see us taking Harry Mudd when he's not in our jurisdiction.
So they take Mudd to the brig. I do like how confident Mudd is this entire time. At no point does he show any fear or any concern. He knows already he's getting the hell out of there. He is not concerned by these people.
No, of course. He's Mudd.
He's Mudd. He's dealt with them a couple times before.
Right.
His basic response is, "What? I'm not doing anything wrong because the love patient, it's totally real."
Yeah.
"You got nothing on me, copper."
Well, but then it
now,
turns
and
out
the thing that... I like is that you can tell Arthur C. Carmel's actually experienced voice actor.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
yeah,
he can.
He's awesome.
He does stand out pretty distinctly.
Yeah, he
in
is
that regard.
That's one thing I didn't notice this entire episode, that Mudd's voice is just, I mean, he just acts
he projects.
The hell out of it.
He projects into that character.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Everybody else is literally reading lines off of a script because they don't know how to voice act the same way.
Right.
No, so it turns out, like, one charge they do have on Mudd is that he sold Starfleet Academy.
It's like Brooklyn Bridge, you know.
Yes.
I like their force field over their door, too. It just makes things darker. It's just, you know, polarized.
Uh-huh.
They polarize the doorway.
I mean, considering otherwise, you know, to represent it, you'd probably just get, like, glowing borders. I kind of like that choice.
Well, it's hard to see until it happens real time. Because before it's like, oh, is he just in a dark closet? That's just kind of shady.
Or did he just turn off the lights between cuts?
Right, right. And apparently they didn't search him, or they didn't search him or take the contraband off his person.
Well, you know, they trusted that he would do the honorable thing and just turn it over, because that's what they're supposed to do.
Starfleet is dicks.
Now, Starfleet is stupid. Spock is kind of a dick.
That's because he's a Vulcan.
Yeah.
So with Mud locked up, whichever character Major Barrett's playing this time,
Chapel.
Nurse Chapel, who apparently is related to Gosei Red.
Her neck wasn't that long, was it?
Yes, it was.
Pretty swan-like.
Okay.
Giraffe and there's Eryx again, putting his useless two cents. I think we're in space now.
So it's just Spock and Chapel and Mud in the room. And Spock's like, Chapel, I need your report. Chapel's like, could you help me with the report? He's like, no, fuck off. Do it yourself. Bye, bitch. That is quite a neck.
Yeah, that's it's further giraffantine. Mm.
So now we're left with a captured Mud and a recently scorned Chapel.
Yes, who is gullible as all hell.
Well, she's a woman.
And she wants a man.
Well, now, to be fair, though, I mean, she's not immediately gullible. I mean, he's got to wear her down. I mean...
Yeah. He does, but, he kind of reasons her into it and uses her...
Yeah, he basically does trick her. I mean, she's not stupid. He basically says, well, I've got it. It works. Why don't you try and do some tests on it to see if it'll work?
Right. He appeals to her scientific nature, which I think is cool.
Yes.
That's just don't like laboratory test it, because that will destroy it.
Yeah.
At now, which point, she's already halfway into his snake oil spiel, so she's hooked.
Right. It's easier to sell something somebody that they already want.
So, the thing is, too, at the point where she's convinced enough to lower the force field and come get the crystal, she's also holding a phaser on him the whole time.
Right, right. Yeah, she's not totally dumb. And Mud is playing along. He's like, sure, fine, here you go. And gets back into his cell after the deed is done.
After the deed is done.
Not that deed.
No, I think that's really cool, though. Because I like the animation, too, where she kind of passes out for a second. He grabs her, yoinks the phaser in like two frames. You don't even see it happen almost. And he gets back in his cell because that's all part of his plan. Because I was thinking, oh, God, he's going to punch her or something. You know, he's going to, like, overpower her and run away. But no, he's more cunning than that, and I like that.
He is a cunning linguist.
Yes. So where are we at now? What are we looking at?
Let's see. She breaks the capsule and rubs it on her skin, or else she gets the hose again.
No, that's what she wants. She wants the hose.
Ah, yes. Okay, so she's dosed herself with space roofies.
She wants Spock's pointy-eared hose.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so she's gone off to go find Spock to test out this love potion, leaving Mud unattended.
Right.
With her phaser. And he stole her driver's license.
Yeah, what a dick
move. She's proceeding to use to make a fake ID so he can buy some beer.
I love this, that they use these little plastic cards that have your photograph on it. I love it.
That he can phaser off of it.
Yeah, they could. Yeah. What setting is that?
Erase. It's set phasers to whiteout.
Set phaser to correction tape. I also love that he makes a fake ID by just changing the photo. Not even bothering to change the name.
Right.
Look, if he puts a card in that says Christine Chapel with his face, the computer's not going to ask questions, apparently.
No. Like I said, these are dual
Christine, you got ugly. But I ain't going to say nothing because we're progressive. I'm not going to call out attention to your mustache.
Your butt teeth or your comb over. Oh, so now we get some swanky stuff going on with Spock.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in Spock's quarters...
Yeah.
Nurse Chaplin enters in. Oh my goodness! I seem to appear to have fallen onto your lap.
I fell onto your dick. Sorry.
It's possible. Like, yes, you have. I want your report. Get off my shit. And Chapel's not quite giving up. He's like, are you sure you don't want any help? In your pants? With my hand?
Just for a second, just to see how it feels. Oh, but she's pissed now. She's so pissed.
Yes, she just got friend-zoned by Spock. And she's like, well, this is stupid. I'm going to go kick Mud's ass.
And then a hand comes out of nowhere, slaps her in the jaw, and then slides away again from just nowhere. It's like an arm on a stick. And then she checks her purse, and there's no phaser.
Or driver's license.
Right. I love it when when Mud opens up the shuttle bay, that smile he has on his face is like, here's Johnny!
Oh, you mean, hang on. I got that one.
Screenshotting it?
Oh, I already did.
Oh, okay, that's in your personal collection already, I see.
Here you go.
Oh, God.
Yep,
yeah, there's
that's the
that
one.
Look, you could drive a truck to those teeth. Look, you can fly an Excelsior class through that. Look at that.
Only if you turn it sideways. Dramatically flip it on its side at the last second.
Also, there's some really cool-looking shuttlecraft in the shuttle bay. No two of those shuttlecraft are exactly the same. Some of them are like hot rods. Like
yeah, I like the hot roddy one up toward the doors.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want that one. I was thinking, the whole time I was thinking, I want them to get the cool one. I was like pointing at it, like at the screen going, Mud, get that one. He didn't hear
no,
me.
No, he's just going to get the boring one.
Right. So Spock kind of figured out what's going on. Something's weird going on.
Because he's suddenly in love with Christine Chapel.
Yeah. Well, so am I.
Troy's mom.
So then the cool
so
part.
Back at the
part happened.
Awesome part.
Where Nurse Chapel judo chops Harry Mudd.
Hell yeah. That's awesome.
Karate!
She's been studying with Sulu.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, she comes and crushes out and knocks on the ground, takes the phaser, and is like, bitch, I will phase you.
And if she had just shot him, the episode would have been over with.
Yeah, and I love that she's a nurse. She's not supposed to be doing any harm, but she's kicking his ass. Yeah.
She's not harming him. She's just, you know, fucking him up a little bit.
Not gonna kill you. I'm just gonna hurt you.
Also, she's a nurse. She's not a doctor. She didn't take the Hippocratic Oath.
Ah, that's
true. She can do all the harm she wants. That's why she stays a nurse.
Yeah, that's why. So, do you want to be a doctor? You totally have the credentials. No. I'm good. I like hurting people. I've made my choice. It's like a captain who doesn't want to be promoted up to admiral, you know.
I don't want to be stuck behind a desk. I want to be out there hurting people.
Nurse, do hypersprays normally have big needles on them? This one does.
All right, so she's got Mud at phaser point. It's like, she wants to point out, this is it on stun, not kill, right now.
Yeah.
And it's like,
finger.
Well, maybe the crystal I gave you
to
work. Here, would you like some more drugs? To which he responds by trying to shoot him in the face.
Which he dodges, amazingly.
But you know, she's a bad shot, but I like that she doesn't hesitate to try and stun the shit out of him when he tries to give her more
like,
shitty drugs.
Maybe it takes longer on Vulcans because they're dicks.
I think that's a plausible explanation.
And see, this episode does something that Star Trek needs to do more, too. You have a weapon with a stun setting, which will take someone down without actually hurting them on the first couple shots. Like I said, on the first couple shots. If you keep getting shot with it, it's eventually going to add up. But no, you can shoot somebody once or twice, and it's not really going to hurt them. Shoot them and ask questions later.
Right.
That's actually a capable plan in this scenario.
Right.
Except in this one particular case, that turns out not to be a great plan because he drops all of his crystals and they get blown up and fly into the air vents of the Enterprise.
No, my D4s!
Because apparently the central air conditioning in the shuttle bay goes directly to the bridge.
Yes. Sucks in air from all the exhaust, from all the shuttlecraft.
And all the
well,
back.
You know, they
and...
like that burning dilithium smell.
Ugh, burnt dilithium.
It's even better when the door when they open the shuttle bay doors when they have the AC running.
That totally destroys like your air coefficients, you know.
Spock, close those doors. I'm not paying to air condition the entire universe.
So, whoops, Christine Chapel just dosed the entire crew with space roofies.
Yeah. And there's Eric's again, like, I don't feel so good.
So,
and then Eric's falls in love with his own third arm.
Well, I think he was already in a deep, committed relationship with it.
Mud subdues Chapel.
How?
Tenderly.
Yeah.
No, but it's just like I couldn't quite figure out how this happened because she just seems to fall unconscious onto him.
Yeah.
I'm suspecting that he was supposed to hit her and they cut that out to BSMP.
Oh.
Because she kind of collapses. Like he probably dicked her and they did not want to show that in a cartoon.
Just punted her between the legs and made her pass out due to pain.
I thought that part was very pain resistant. That's what Berthin was all about.
No. Mud did the Black Condor maneuver and, you know, punched her right in the uterus.
Abortion punch! See, Scott, this is why you should watch something Toku that I tell you to watch.
Hey, I watch Akiba Ranger.
Good, yes, now watch Go-Onger.
But this episode of Jetman had an abortion punch and they also fought a giant monster named of cup noodles.
So slightly less weird than Magic of Mugatu or whatever it's called.
Magus 2.
Yeah, Magus 2.
The Mugatu was the white ape thing with the Godzilla spikes.
Yeah, with the horn.
The
right.
Mugatu was the one that had invented the piano key necktie.
Oh yeah. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills here.
All right, so what the shit's going on here? Ah, yes, okay, so Kirk and Spock are going to head down to rescue Christine Chapel because Spock's in love!
Yeah, and everyone's like, is that a good idea to let him because he's mentally compromised go? And Kirk's like, well, we can't stop him. He's Spock. I might as well just go with him and see what happens. It's like, whoa, that was a little honest, wasn't it?
And it's... He knows if he tries to stop Spock, he'll just escape and go anyway.
Right, well, and he's Spock. He's stronger and smarter than everybody.
Right, because remember, this is before the Spock-proof jail cell was installed.
This is true, and this might be why that was added to the Next Enterprise.
Yeah, that's why the Next Enterprise had the Spock-proof jail cell and the kryptonite ring, because Batman designed it.
Seemed that one day somebody would have to stop Spock if he ever became compromised.
No, but see, this is another case where, okay, you know what? Stun Spock, and then, I don't know, tie him to the bottom of the ship or something.
Oh, so keelhaul him. That's a solution. All right, so that's another thing. If Spock is in love, how does this interfere with, like, his Ponfar?
Well, okay, so the Ponfar is just when they have to. Doesn't mean that's the only time they can.
The Ponfar is the physical act of mating. This is love. That's the emotional response.
Yeah, that's
again,
true.
I'm going to say the Ponfar is just the physical requirement to, but they're perfectly capable of at any other time.
That's true.
When it's logical to do so.
Yeah, because those two things are very different, because I can absolutely have one and not have the other.
Sure you can. I believe that you could have one or the other, absolutely.
Men can fake whole relationships. All right.
So your fiance doesn't listen to this, I assume.
God, I hope not.
She's not around right now.
No. She's doing something interesting.
Like knitting or something.
You mean like baking?
Yeah, she's probably baking. She's a pastry chef. So. Yeah, when I tell her to get back in the kitchen, it actually makes sense. She's like, okay.
But she still slaps you anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She wears the apron in this family, and that, that actually makes sense. So what are we looking at?
I don't know.
Scott desperately tries to get us off this line of conversation.
I'm going to mercy beam up right now.
We've found Scott's weakness. Set phasers to exploit.
Okay, all right. So Kirk and Spock beam down the planet. And up on the bridge, we learn something deeply disturbing about Scotty. Scotty's got furry fever.
Yeah, who doesn't? I mean, look at her. For God's sakes, look at her.
And also, Cat Lady is Major Barrett again. Also sounding disinterested.
Yeah, but in heat. Cat girl's going to heat.
Wonder how Cat Girl cycles line up with a Ponfar.
I don't know, but it also makes me wonder how come she only has two boobs.
Well, isn't that the failing of most Cat Girl depictions?
Well, if you consider that a failing, that tells us a lot more about you than it does about the drawings.
I'm just thinking in terms of, like, anatomical accuracy here.
My God, my Cat Girls have to be anatomically correct. Basically,
isn't
just
that,
a cat.
Isn't that the
That's
whole point?
I think it's a part where they're about to beam down and they're like looking at the crystals. And I'm just waiting for, like, because Kirk kind of holds up to his face. He's looking at it. I'm just waiting for him to start going toward his mouth very slowly to lick it. And then Bones has to slap it out of his hand. No. Smack. Stop it.
Bad Kirk.
All right. Well,
this is Kirk. He doesn't need the crystals.
Yeah.
Mud and Chapel are hanging out around some very obviously totally non-organic mountains. Mm-hmm. Nope, no chance they're ever going to move around. Very safe.
Sure.
Back on the bridge, Derpy has learned to play a double lute.
Oh, and then he makes a brilliant observation. Is anybody paying attention to the captain and Mr. Spock?
And Catgirl has got her tail in an erection pose.
I'm telling you, that's called presenting.
All right, so let's get to the best scene in the episode.
Well, is it the one with the giant one-eyed monster?
You're going to phrase it that way.
You're going to have to be more specific, Scott.
Big, brown, long, one-eyed monster.
So Kirk and Spock beam down to the planet, and things start getting very milky.
Oh, God.
You know, Spock, you're my best friend. And you're mine, Jim. Let's hug. You know, just kind of rub them against each other a little bit.
Dislocate Spock's shoulder a bit.
That's how Vulcans show love. They dislocate their arms.
That's probably not completely inaccurate.
So,
all right. So, Spock and Kirk eventually meet up with Mud and Chapel, but at the same time, they're being assaulted by giant rock monsters.
Well,
yeah, so Mud.
Well, right before
plan.
That, when it starts assaulting them, like when Chapel just turns, slowly walks away.
Yeah, so Mud's whole brilliant plan here is fly the shuttle down to the planet, leave Chapel with the shuttle while he just like runs off into the wilderness.
Yeah, he's like, oh, there's got to be a civilization here, right? I'll wander the planet until I find it,
and then take advantage of them.
Right. That's a confident man right there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's Henry Mudd.
I bet he'd be good at magic.
Harry Mudd.
So I like the fact that they just destroy the shuttlecraft. Those monsters just crumple it like tinfoil.
Now, aren't you glad they didn't take the hot rod shuttle down?
Yeah. So then Spock meets up with Chapel, and they start just touching each other.
I love a bit of lines here. Spock, can't you kick your hands off of her? That's my business, Captain. Fuck off.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay.
Whoa. Hold his hands up.
And Chap's like, Kirk, come on. I'm about to get some Vulcan dick here. Stop blocking.
Yeah, I like how Chapel is all confused and concerned, like, oh, no. And then she thinks about it for a second and goes, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ooh, all right.
Let's go find some non-living rocks over there.
Yeah. So they're back up on the ship. McCoy is hitting on like a 15-year-old ensign. Yes. What the hell, McCoy? You know, I've got the hands of a surgeon.
His best pickup lines are about shit that Kirk did that was brave. So Kirk got injured, saving us all from all these monsters, and I sewed him back together. Another time, Kirk did the shit with the Klingons. That was amazing. And then I saved his life.
I've saved
and then this other time, Kirk got this terrible case of syphilis. I gave him some penicillin.
So they keep trying to call up to the ship and like, is anybody there? And then there's...
Oh, man, you should have seen what I did with Scotty's liver.
It's bionic. It's literally just a strainer. I just put it in his abdomen. It's just metal. So like, I keep calling up to the ship, and there's this couple doing like the three-step Watusi. And by three-step, I mean three frames of animation.
Yeah.
So they're like, you can save us now.
Now we're too busy dancing.
Yeah, you can save us anytime.
Dancing.
Well, Kirk realizes they're not going to get through the ship, so they've got to strike this monster. And he turns to look at Mud. Have you got any more of those crystals on you?
Well, first he says, you know, we need to distract these monsters. And Spock's all, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah, he like just assaults him. Oh, my God. Yeah, Spock is such a dick.
He's a Vulcan.
Now, all this drug has done is make him fall in love with Chapel. But he's like, Captain, that's the stupidest goddamn thing I've ever heard. Oh, sorry, that was just the drug talking.
Yeah, as he smirks after he says, you see that smirk he does, like,
No one will ever know this is how I actually feel.
Kirk's plan is to space roofie some space kaiju made of mountains.
Yeah.
And how can you not love this episode? He's going to slip some GHB to a mountain.
Why did Kirk roofie the mountain? Kirk
because it was there.
I like how they phasered them, too.
In Star Trek V, he wasn't climbing that mountain. He was fucking it.
All right, so
he'd already dosed it.
They use phasers on these things that could rip huge canyons in the middle of a work camp, a mining camp, does nothing to them. Kirk does a fucking battle roll, and that's when they get saved.
Well, that's when the dance is over. He chucks
the space drugs up to him, like, you know, he's feeding some ducks.
Here you go, ducks. Have some drugs.
Yeah. I like the fact that Chapel does redeem herself, though. She gets tricked when she comes back and almost kicks Mud's ass.
So and then she gets her ass kicked, she gets kidnapped. So,
yeah, I know. It's neutral.
That's probably a net loss.
One step forward, three steps back.
Yeah, basically.
So they get Mud back up to the ship. They put him back in the cell.
Yeah, so the whole resolution to all this nonsense is that they just outwaited for the drugs to wear off.
Right.
Up on the ship for them to be saved.
Yeah, no, Dr. McCoy didn't help. There's no techno babble. There's no clever ending.
It's a drug. It doesn't last very long.
Right. And the other part was that you get like an hour of love, but like 3 hours of hate toward the person apparently that you loved for that first hour.
And you get hungover as well.
Right.
And if anybody would know about hangovers, it's Scotty.
Oh, yeah, yeah. For him to complain about a hangover has got to be something.
Uh-huh.
I particularly like that it's a cartoon aimed at children talking about hangovers.
And, of course, now they've clearly given the last ones to Mud.
Because now he loves about
everyone he's ripped off.
So they're gonna be there for a while.
Yeah. So whatever happened to Mud? I mean, I assume this was the last mention of him in any kind of official capacity, right?
I assume they killed him after this because they were tired of his shit.
Yeah, then show him floating cold in space. So I think I might have to hit memory alpha after this, see whatever happened to Mud.
Yeah, well,
you probably, memory beta, it'll be more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, beta would be more fun.
Beta would probably be more helpful anyway, because anything involving Mud after this would be novels.
Right. And God forbid if I'm going to read those, I'll just read about them on beta.
I can probably guarantee you he showed up somewhere in the MMO at some point.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, yeah. Well, yeah, that one was good, but not nearly as good as Magus 2. That was just... My jaw was open most of the time watching that one. I mean, the space was good, but man.
Right, it's the same thing as last time we did animated series where, like, the Infinite Vulcan is amazing for all the weirdness in it. Just mm-hmm. like this is amazing for all the space roofies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it's not that great of an episode, objectively.
No, Magic... didn't really...
Well, compared to the other animated episodes we've seen, yes. But say, compare this episode to anything in Voyager or Enterprise?
Well, I know that. I'm just saying, like, you know, this series can produce really amazingly good Star Trek episodes, and then it can make this, which is amazing for the concept in the context.
Right, right. Conceptually fantastic, cool stuff.
And the interesting thing with Mud's Passion is that the script was developed from one plan for the TV show before it was canceled.
So the thing is, animated series is canon. I mean, it's just as real. Anything that's been on television is canon, right? Movies, TV.
Yes.
Right. So them going to the center of the galaxy and Kirk becoming magic god, that's a real thing.
And then they went to a different center of the galaxy in Star Trek V, I guess.
Yeah, well, all galaxies have two centers. I mean, everyone knows that. So
yeah, well, there's, you know, the crunchy center, and then there's the nougat inside.
you beat me to it, damn it. creamy nougat.
So, how many licks does it take to get to the center of the galaxy?
Well, besides, it makes sense, too, that, like, you know, yeah, the devil's at the center of the galaxy, and God's up there somewhere, too.
Right. So which begs the question, was that God just one of the entities from the magical universe that came through and was causing trouble? So Lucifer was the good guy, the God figure was the bad guy. I'm so confused.
Good job, Star Trek.
Yeah.
Star Trek animated is the best.
Yeah, I still can't believe they had the balls to do it, though, to go, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to explain Satan, and we're going to have Kirk fight him, and Kirk's going to win, and that explains Satan. So we're just going to go ahead and throw that out there. Christianity, all the three major religions of Earth, we just tied up in a 20-minute cartoon. That's ballsy.
And it was better than Star Trek V.
It's still better than Star Trek V.
I don't know. This episode did not have an alluring fan dance.
There wasn't time.
Or a pool table.
Yeah, that's true. The cat girl wasn't even the first one either, so yeah.
A pool table literally full of water.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Worst Spock-proof prison cell.
But they didn't even need a Spock-proof prison cell for that episode. They needed it for the next episode. Actually, two episodes before, I think.
And they could have used the rocket boots to scale those rock monsters.
Yeah.
Rock monster. The thing is, I am disappointed. They went down to a planet, fought rock monsters. Kirk did a judo roll. Shirt did not get torn. A little disappointed.
That would have required them to draw a new piece.
Right, right. But it would answer the question whether or not all entities in the Star Trek universe don't have nipples or not. I mean, that's kind of the burning question I have.
I think we would just assume yes.
Okay. Well, if that's what we're going with, you know.
It's just like how all entities in the Star Trek universe don't poop. And that's why there's no toilets on the Enterprise.
They have sonic toilets.
Well, I was going to say
they obliterate the turds within you.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, yeah, they just transport them, you know.
They teleport the shit out of your colon.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I just assume that's what that's not the way it works.
Yeah, and then,
to the meta reserves.
Yep.
And then when Starfleet officers are stuck on the planet for a while without access to a transporter toilet, their bodies get kind of messed up because they don't remember how to poop anymore.
Right, right. The anuses have totally just healed over.
Poor Thomas
Riker. None of the muscles work anymore.
8 years, not being able to poop. No one came back and it was all a dick and joined the McKee.
Full of shit.
I bet that still hadn't passed by then.
Yeah. So animated series this week. What are we looking at next week, gentlemen?
TMP.
Star Trek, the motion picture.
Really? The motion picture, huh?
Or...
motionless.
Yeah. So every time we hear the bwong, do we take a shot or what? Bwong.
Oh, I better take another shot then.
Bwong.
Ah. I hope it's better than I remember, even though I know it won't be.
No, it's not. Yeah. The only thing that I can do while watching the motion picture is keep thinking V'ger is from the planet Borg. The Borg made V'ger. That makes this cool.
I thought Earth made V'ger.
No. They made Voyager. They didn't make V'ger. V'ger went to the black hole and landed on the Borg planet.
V'ger was punishment for us filming Voyager.
Okay, see, now we got the time stream all mixed up again. You're hurting my head.
How? I mean, we filmed Voyager long before Star Trek happened. I mean, it takes place in the distant future.
Right.
It's true.
When you say we, do you mean like you three guys did this?
Yes.
And also, what does my Skype say is the year 1901? That's not good.
That's because you're West Coast. You're not caught up with the rest of the time. So we're technically in the future from you.
That's true.
Yeah, oh. California is like 114 years in the past.
Yeah. So go ahead and ask me what's going to be on Letterman tonight, and I can tell you before it'll even happen.
It's like magic.
The magics of Megas 2?
Yes. The magics CK of Megas 2. Megas, like with an E. It's not even Megas, like a Magus. It's Megas. So there's like more than one Mega. It's like Megas. Megas 2.
Nice. They should have made a Playmates figure for the animated series.
Oh, yeah. I totally want an Eric's figure. I want all of his joints articulated. And when you click him, the button on his back, he's supposed to do that stupid whistle he did in the last episode. What the frick was that? He just whistled for no reason. It's like
how can
he
whistle
like,
with that mouth anyway? Now, how can he whistle with that mouth anyway?
Well, he can do all kinds of things with that mouth.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Yeah, the thing we didn't see in Mud's Passion is the scene where Eric and Sulu were kind of getting, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, he's got three hands. I mean, he could take Sulu. That's right. Chekhov wasn't even there. Oh, man. So him and Uhura both. He could have taken out Sulu and Uhura at the same time.
Well, Uhura wasn't there that week either.
Oh, you're right. What the hell?
That's why we had Cat Major
Barrett. You had so much Major Barrett.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, Scotty already had that, so I don't know. Probably one of those nameless red shirts taken for the team.
No, because it's like, you know, Mud said at the beginning, you know, people of the same sex, it makes them really good friends. But does that apply when it's an alien?
That's true. I mean, it's interspecies.
Mm-hmm. Hard to say.
But fun to watch. All right, so let's okay. I got to go to Rule 34 and then look up Eric's and Cat Majel Barrett. Hopefully, this Google won't fail me. All right.
I'm pretty sure Cat Majel Barrett had a name, but hell if I can remember.
Embrus.
Yeah, what was that?
Embrus, I think.
Oh yeah, like M apostrophe R S S or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know what I'm Googling tonight.
At some point, we should watch Star Trek V. The Restaurant Enterprise.
Mm. What?
I think we should watch, like, Nemesis or something. I think that would be fun. Just immediately.
No, Nemesis is not fun to watch, ever.
Aw.
We've tried.
Really? Okay.
The last time, I think it was the last, was that the last time I visited?
Yep.
That probably was why it's the last time I visited. No, the last time I visited Mickey, we, like, put Nemesis on and we all fell asleep.
It's so awful. You're all
tuckered out.
To be fair, I think Mickey and Russ did have some to drink.
Oh, you think? Just a little?
And it was like midnight when we put it on?
Yeah, probably. I don't remember. Oh, was that after we watched Age of Extinction?
I think it was.
Apparently,
it
was we just had
tiring
a,
as it is.
We had a thing for watching shitty movies that day.
Again, this is my not shocked face watching shitty movies at Hey Mickey's house. Hey guys, you gotta watch this. Oh god, alright.
I've shown you lots of great things, so shut your whore mouth.
I've managed to avoid him showing me Catwoman so far.
Catwoman's great, though.
No. Hey Mickey's got the weirdest taste because it's this highly refined palette for the worst shit in the world. But occasionally, and here's the confusing part, he'll give you something that's actually awesome with the same level of enthusiasm. So you just never know, so you have to do all of them so you don't miss anything good.
That's because Hey Mickey enjoys, like, super bad movies.
I know.
I have never aired anything that I don't enjoy, with the exception of Nemesis. But then again, I didn't really realize how much I hated it at the time.
You know what? Yeah. Neither did I. Like, it took that viewing that night for me to realize, I don't like this at all. And that's why we will never do Nemesis for this podcast.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was a rule then.
Yeah, we came up with that a few weeks ago, I think.
No, that's... Hey, I'm on board, man. I am on board.
Well, it was Nemesis that you thought was just bad fanfic from the script.
Yes.
And you saw in the theater.
And watching the movie, I'm still not convinced that it's not bad fanfic.
You know, it's literally not part of my headcanon. The whole thing of Data dying and all that crap didn't happen. It didn't freaking
happen. I think the novels that are set after that basically take the same stance where B4 turns into Data.
The comic books definitely do. The comic books that kind of tie into the Star Trek MMO, they do that where he just almost immediately takes over B4's body and he's just Data again. And he's captain of the Enterprise for a while.
I don't pay that much attention. I just know, like, you know, first chance anybody got, they undid Data dying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, they set it up pretty well at the end of
The movie gave them that back door anyway, but...
Right. There's nothing... Hey, Mickey. I mean, I just love it when things give me a back door that I can easily slide into. I mean, you know, it's just... No? Nothing?
Did you ever read any of the Titan novels?
No. I have seen them, but I have not read them.
Me either.
I don't know if they're any good, but I actually want to read them myself to find out.
But then I have not actually read a Star Trek novel since I was like 15.
Where they had
most of the first 10 DS9 novels were pretty good.
Hmm.
So what about the YouTube movies that have been funded, like Axanar and some of the other ones? So there's one that actually was completed a couple, like a month or two ago, and I sat down and tried to watch it, and it's like an hour and a half movie, but I couldn't get past like the first 10 minutes because it was so terrible, but I assume it got better. I mean, seriously, I mean, like, I want to support the people who are making these fan fiction to get real actors. I mean, I think Tim Russ was in it and all this kind of cool stuff. But,
I thought you said real actors.
Or Tim Russ.
Well, you know.
Yeah, didn't you say real actors?
Well, you know, at least he has a passion for Star Trek. Come on. When he's not playing his mandolin or whatever.
maybe he should have played a character when he was in a Star Trek show for 7 years.
Oh, jeez.
Well, no, there was no. He was in that one Next Generation episode as one of the terrorists trying to steal the catalytic converter off the Enterprise.
And he was
also he was on the Enterprise B.
Yeah, he was on. Yeah, he was on Generations on the B.
Mm-hmm. You know, actually, we should watch.
And
Starship
he was in Spaceballs.
Mine.
Really?
What? Yeah, he was the one that didn't find shit.
No, that's Tim Russ.
Yes. That's Tim Russ.
He was also in an episode of The Fresh Prince.
Well,
so was Shredder.
Well, yeah, that was a little more memorable. But that's because Shredder wasn't Tim Russ.
Yeah.
Oh, man, Tim Russ being a Shredder.
I will get you, Turtles.
I just like the fact that there was a black Vulcan. I think that's cool that, like, apparently even alien races have the same, like, ethnicities as Earth for some reason.
But it wasn't until after there was a black Romulan.
There was a black
Romulan?
I want
to say that. Wasn't there a black Vulcan
Next Generation
before,
episode
though?
Pegasus. What, Mickey?
Wasn't there a black Vulcan before in one of the movies? Like Star Trek 3?
No, I don't remember.
Maybe at the end?
Huh.
Like one of the ones receiving receiving Spock's body.
It was on Planet Vulcan, clearly, but I want to say there was. It was a woman.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't like the priestess. She was ethnic in some way. She wasn't just, you know, generic white person. Because white people are generic. I mean, let's be honest.
I'm a little confused as to why Vulcans would end up being get browner. Wouldn't they get greener?
Yeah, more melanin in their skin, I guess. And plus, they live on a desert planet. What other biomes do they have?
Well, they still have...
The Vulcan coloration was always slightly green-tinted from Spock's makeup. I assume that...
Well, that's because
their different skin tones would be darker variations of that.
Yeah, but brown is also related to green.
I suppose. I guess,
oh, you
I
know what? Brown
Tim Russ have more of a green tint to him, I guess.
Brown-skinned Vulcans are probably ones where they're like from late in the season and there's not as much chlorophyll being produced.
Oh, God.
That's awful.
God, these vine-ripened Vulcans. That's you have to go around and knock them on the head, see if they're ripe yet.
Or maybe the melanin just like powers of the galaxy. The green tint from the blood.
Yeah, from the copper-based blood.
I guess.
Well, yeah, that would be the actual explanation.
Well, no, yeah, it's true because, okay, so copper turns green when it's oxidized. So when their blood is oxygenated, it's green. But when it's not, it's normal copper color, you know, that brownish kind of color. So maybe they're just, I don't know, unoxygenated. They're just all asphyxiating.
They're space Vulcans then.
Yes.
Okay, so it's like a bunch of Vulcans who use a lot of antioxidants.
Right. They're like chugging cranberries.
Yes, that's how that works.
Cranberries.
So yeah, motion picture next week. Listen or don't. I can't really blame you either way.
All right.
And I think that'll be our show for this week. Now that we've gotten to the bottom of Vulcan blood colors or something, I don't know.
We
now that we've solved
racism.
The mystery of vine-ripened Vulcans.